What's up, y'all? Welcome to the Sports Medicine Broadcast. We are live at the Sports Medicine Update for Memorial Hermann. We are interviewing Dr. Mark Persarn.
Yep, that's correct.
Dr. Persarn. He's a spinal surgeon. He works with the Houston Texans. And last year, you kind of revolutionized my thinking. It was a lot of fun teaching the students the six-man lift because I'd never heard of that before. And so it was really cool to hear you talk about that again. This year, you changed it to the eight-plus or the eight-man lift.
Right.
And we're going to talk some about that, but we also have Bubba Wilson here from Memorial Hermann and Daniel Young, works at Katie Taylor High School. They're going to be interviewing Dr. Persarn today for the Sports Medicine Broadcast. So, all right, go ahead.
It was a great talk, very interesting. The first thing that came to mind, and I think probably all of us deal with, is we deal with different emergency medical services providers.
Okay.
You're in a great situation with the Texans because what y'all say goes. They do what y'all want to do. I know where Jeremy is, they run a two-man crew. Okay. Depending on where I was and the schools I worked at, we might have, I won't name them, but we might have one city service, and then we go play a game on a home stadium, and it's a different city service. And how they interact with us was totally different. And the one of the things you talked about was getting them to the medical center, which I do not discount whatsoever. But honestly, once we call them in, we as athletic trainers almost lose any control that we had. Arguing over to remove equipment, not to remove equipment. Okay. Now with the Simpsons, the paramedics being able to make some of those spinal clearance calls and some of the protocols they have now. So kind of what is your advice or information concerning that aspect of it? So, besides good luck. I mean, you know.
Yeah, I guess, you know, not just because we're sitting here talking today and the forum we're at, I would argue that that's suboptimal, first off.
Oh, no doubt.
You know, and I think that, you know, if you look at like the handout and the guidelines that are going to come out from NATA, like we've recommended, and it's not just athletic trainers that make up the forum that came up with these guidelines. There's probably three or four physicians. We recommend an athletic trainer be sort of the pivotal person in this, you know, the one calling the shots and one always be present.
Right.
You know, I think one of our concerns and, you know, as far as these types of issues go that you're talking about, you know, it's again, like you're saying, it's different for professional sports because if we go to the hospital with an athlete, you know, we're not even gonna let the ER touch the patient. Like it's gonna be several physicians going with the athlete,
right,
as well as one of the athletic trainers from, say, the Texans or
right,
the Rockets or whoever. So I think that's a problem. I guess maybe we should sit down and try to decide a way to change, you know, make change. And I think that I agree. I think there should be more say by the athletic trainers for sure.
You know, you're sitting there, for instance, and I've got an athlete, I'm holding C-spine as best I can while I'm trying to tell them, no, the face mask is already off. We don't need to remove the helmet at this point.
Right.
Off current guidelines. We don't need to remove the helmet. We need to take them here. Well, we want to go. We need to go here by protocol. No, you don't. You can go downtown.
Right.
You know, and so there's always, or, you know, we need to log roll them. Well, we have enough people, we can lift them. There's always going to be a fight, and it's very hard in some cities with their ER, emergency medical directors, to get them to understand who we are, what we do, and what we're trying to do. And I don't know that divide is ever going to be totally closed up, if that makes sense.
I would propose the best thing I think we could do is, at least at your home stadiums, that, you know, if there's some way to kind of meet with the EMS guys that are likely going to be the responders to try to have a plan and you all rehearse it and practice
right,
it, obviously. And I think that's the best we can do. I would say from my standpoint, we have started meeting with the EMS people and LifeLight people and things, and I'll bring this up as an issue and try to help change.
Right. I'm sure you've had, the same situation. And again, for, you know, with Jeremy's EMS system, they run with two, so now – I've got to teach my coaches how to lift,
yeah,
so we can get them on a backboard. If that's provided, if they run a fire truck out or not, you don't know.
Right.
Some do, some don't. Well, then that changes how you run your entire emergency action plan. You know, now you got to rethink all of this. But I think it's always going to be an issue. But you had a lot of good things to say, especially about log rolling, not log rolling. Those things were pretty interesting.
I had a patient that you saw earlier this year that was injured in a game,
mm-hmm,
injured at Beaumont,
mm-hmm,
and we log rolled him on the field because that's what the EMS staff there knew.
Right.
And then, you know, transport to Beaumont, transport to Houston. You saw him eventually, and
but it's hours later,
right?
Always. And if they had a bad injury, like things could go bad, right?
Right.
You know, all that time on that backboard.
Oh. Yeah, 20 hours on a backboard.
Wow.
And catastrophic-wise, for the most part, it's the same care parameters. You immobilize them, you eventually get them on a backboard, whether you roll them or lift them. Mm-hmm. You x-ray them, then you take off their pads. But how do you tell the? How do you distinguish like the non-catastrophic injury, like the little ligaments that hold your atlas and axis together, or the cruciform ligaments? Is there a test that you can do on the field to determine if those are stable or not stable?
Probably one of the best predictors that, or one of the best tests you could do, what you're asking about, would be if you can just palpate their spine. So even more sensitive than an MRI, one of the best like determinants of an unstable ligamentous injury is just feeling their neck or back. And if there's a gap or step off that your fingers fall into, or if they have exquisite pain, that is one of the best indicators for having a really bad injury.
And then whether they're actually on the field or they're already off the field, if you palpate them on the sideline and you do feel that, you just leave them sitting, stabilize them, and
I think then you're going to go strict spine precautions and, okay, you know, send them to a level one center. Yeah.
What is the – I know there's been some talk about doing away with the spine board. What's the latest on that?
Yeah, so I talked a little bit about that. You know, again, that's based on really poor evidence and data. Again, for you folks, the guidelines for NATA stay the same, still spine board and hard cervical collar. But that is a debate that's going on, yeah. But again, it's not based on good evidence, and I don't think we should do away with it.
Right, and cervical collar is a little bit of a misnomer because that's not going to go on to a football player if pads stay on.
Correct.
So,
right.
You know, so I'm interested to see those
guidelines. The new guidelines are to remove everything.
Right,
know,
which is really, that's going to be interesting when you're doing that, and the parents are going to be freaking out too. So there's going to be a lot of issues to work around.
But is it safe to remove without like x-ray or any kind of data before you take it off?
So it depends which technique you're doing and what kind of pads I have. And so it's a really complicated matter. I mean, you all know this. You know, I think if you're going to do the technique that we've proposed, a torso elevation technique, we'd like to get an x-ray to make sure they don't have a thoracolumbar injury before you set them up to do it. If they have like some of the newer pads, like the ripcord pads or something, you can do it without that. They just kind of come apart and slide away, right? And if they have that type of padding on, I think they could come off without having to go anywhere. And you know, we had this was a huge debate when we came up with these guidelines. And I think, you know, again, it's very different for professional sports or even like Division I college sports, because we can go in the stadium, we can go in the back and do it. For you all, the only reason I agree with the guidelines of removing the pads on the field is because, again, you guys are there, right? So I would argue that most, if they get the most hospital ERs, that there's not people, for sure there's not people as well-versed as you guys at removing pads and helmets. And unless one of you go with them, there may not be anybody there that knows what they're doing at all.
Right. The problem is, most schools have at least two, but you may not have both of you there at the game. And so.
Right.
Now you're relying on coaches and kids.
Right. Well, I'm going to, at this point, if I was on a field, I would remove them in the ambulance, probably, just so not everybody on the 10,000 people are watching you do this. I think probably the biggest for me, the biggest would be shoulder pads. If you have traditional shoulder pads, the helmets don't fit them anyway. Those are easy to slide off, you know, quite honestly. Do you know when those guidelines are coming out?
I think in the next few months.
Okay.
You know, and the big push for removing the pads, that was my opinion why I thought it was reasonable, but it's for cardiopulmonary resuscitation if it's necessary.
Right.
Because the pads are a huge impediment to that, right?
Right.
But.
Okay, but so that brings up a good point. What, in the grand scheme of things, what's the lesser of two evils? If the pads stay on, some type of paralysis or death?
Death is worse.
You know,
right?
So yeah, I mean, do what you got to do to save their life.
Right,
at that point.
And that's why NATA, we all agreed that maybe this is the better recommendation: to take the pads off.
Well, even if you leave the pads on and you still put the cables on or the
aid, it's just more difficult, right?
It is more difficult. So if you cut the strings and just splay it open.
Right. You should be able to get there.
You can still get there. You run, you know, the AED delivers a shock. Worst case scenario, they get little burn marks where they hit metal.
The rivets, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, to be honest with you, that was more my feeling. And again, the only reason that I thought about my only thought process behind thinking maybe it was a good idea to do it on the field was because one of the athletic trainers, somebody knew what they were doing, would be present at the time.
How much of a problem are if the pads are in place to get a good x-ray and visualize what you need to visualize? I don't think it's any problem.
They're not a problem, no.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, okay. I think that's one of the arguments of the ER. We can't see anything. What? The spine isn't covered by any equipment.
Right.
You should be able to see everything.
I would agree with you. Yeah.
So,
what's a better scan, MRI or CT, for spine injuries?
So if somebody has a suspected injury, they're going to get a CT. That's current sort of trauma guidelines at this point. So they're going to get both probably. So if they get a CT and everything's normal, if they still have, you know, pain with palpation like we talked about, or if they have a neurologic deficit, then we're going to go ahead and get an MRI, because MRIs are better looking at ligaments and then looking at the nerves of the spinal cord. So most likely, unless they have just a fracture, they may have a fracture that's picked up on CT and that may end up being all, but you know, again, if they have a deficit or we're worried about ligaments, we're going to get an MRI too.
So if they have their pads on when they reach the hospital still, what advice or what suggestion do you have for when they should have the pads taken? After x-ray, after CT? As soon as they get there?
Probably after getting some initial imaging, x-ray or CT first.
Yeah, but I guess you could do it.
Can they
you
fit
do
the it with CT. CT? Yeah, they might not fit CT in the MRI, but they'll fit in the CT.
Yeah. You couldn't do it with MRI.
The tube for CT is quite large, and MRI is, if you've got a big guy, then yeah.
Yeah, they don't fit in with nothing on it.
That's right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Right.
So let me jump in with a question. You talked about doing the jaw thrusters or the head tilt, chin lift.
Uh huh.
So if you're doing CPR, it always says do head tilt, chin lift, right? That's what, you know, American Red Cross said, do head tilt, chin lift, to do your compressions and your breath. So is that just two completely different situations? Because here we're focusing on spinal injuries, or that's really not the best practice, but they just haven't transitioned yet, or?
The previous teaching used to be if you suspected that they had a spinal injury, to do the jaw thrust instead of the head tilt, chin lift.
Okay.
Again, there's been this sort of push away from jaw thrust. And again, it's not based on very good studies. And, that's part of the reason we went and did the research we did and published the paper we did, because we're advocating if you think they have a spine injury, you should do the jaw thrust.
I think with CPR, they're kind of, I don't want to say dumbing it down, but they're making it simpler for everybody to remember the steps. So it's just, here's this one step to do. So I think that's probably why.
I think what you're saying is accurate.
I still think it boils down to what's worse, paralysis or death.
Right.
You know, in the grand scheme of things. How long does it take, on average, somebody to intubate? Let's say you get a C-spine into the ambulance and something happens.
Right.
How long does it take them to intubate them and get an airway?
So that really depends on the experience, the person doing it. It depends on what device they have. I mean, there's a lot of variables with that. When we looked at the study that I presented today, looking at the different airway devices, we had a spectrum of people from an attending anesthesiologist to EMS students. And with the different devices available, it didn't make any difference time. I would say, on average for a trained individual, it's only going to take seconds, right?
So we're not getting a big oxygen deficit per se then?
We shouldn't.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So one of the words that you use is definitive care in your lecture. So talk a little bit more about definitive care.
So what I mean by definitive care and what I'm advocating for as far as where the athlete goes if they have a spinal injury is to the center where they're not only going to be able to sort of stabilize the patient, but they're also going to be able to, if they have an unstable fracture, actually fix it surgically if that requires that. And currently in practice in South Texas, I mean, not just Houston. I mean, I get patients from everywhere, Lake Charles to, Austin, even Austin, and, all over the place. There are most of those surgeons don't feel comfortable taking care of these injuries, and they're going to say transfer to Memorial Hermann Medical Center.
Well, I think it's like the other thing, move them as little as possible. If you're going 2-3 hospital transfers, that's a lot of movement. And how are they getting there?
Time for, if the cord's being compressed, that's time. And we know that, it's been shown in dog studies that taking pressure off the cord as fast as possible improves outcomes. And it's also potential worse injury from moving them several times, right?
Yeah. All right. I don't have anything else.
All right. Well, Dr. Trine, anything else you want to throw out there that you need to be concerned about that thing?
I think just, kind of the reason I included the one handout is make sure you have an emergency action plan and that everybody knows the plan and the individuals involved and you practice just like everything else. And I think that's the best we can do for our athletes.
I think one of the cool things we did this year after we talked to you is we got with East Texas Medical Center. That's who comes out to our school. And we had them come out and, we had the kids in the ambulance and they showed them the stuff. And we met with them to say, hey, this is what we kind of like to do. What do you guys like to do? So that it's not just, hey, show up on game day and I don't have any idea who you are, but we met with them, we met with their supervisors, we talked to them.
Was that last year we did that? Or was it 2 years ago?
I think 2 years ago we met with them at the.
And then you had to come to school?
Professional development. But last year they actually brought the ambulance out to the school and talked with the kids and, did that kind of thing. And so just being familiar with them and us and having our kids familiar with them as well, because kind of like you said, teaching the coaches isn't ideal.
Right.
To do the 8-man lift in our situation. And so just if you have sports medicine. And again, I think that was from what you were saying last year, have a good plan, do this lift. So the kids loved it last year when we try to pick them up. Of course, they do terrible and kids are all sorts of wobbly, but, you know, it's fun for them to get to experience on the back row.
Which, before you cut off, is there a way we can show the lift and catch it on camera?
That way, people in here.
Well, no, but he can at least show hand placement for the people that have never done the 8-man lift.
Possibly. It would be easier if you have it on YouTube or something.
I could. We might have a video somewhere. Yeah. Do you want me to see if I can find it for you guys?
I mean, you could, yeah,
I think
I
we do.
I know I looked it up on YouTube. That may not be the correct one, but it was like a fire department.
You can get it to Bob, and then we can.
Okay. Right. Yeah, I'm pretty sure we do, and I'll get you the guidelines when they come out too.
Okay. Perfect.
Right.
Yeah, perfect.
Better, more efficient.
Well, right, but that way people can actually see what we're talking about. In case they've never seen it
before. It would be better from more camera angles to do that. And we can do that. So we have to take all of Jeremy's stuff down. But I think the biggest thing from my end is if you could just have consistency, again, across the board with EMS services. You know, what we did at practice at our school was going to be totally different than what I was going to be able to do at a home football game because it was in a different city.
Right.
You know, and somebody would go, are you going to do that? Nope, and I'll show you why. You know, and you might put somebody in a splint, and then EMS gets going, oh, we got to take that off.
And, right, like you can put somebody in a vacuum splint.
And they'll take it off and put them in wire. Yeah. You know, and then you go do the same thing at a game. They go, what do you got? This? Okay, you need us to do anything? Just take them to the hospital. Okay, we're good. You know? And so, you're always going to have those.
Yeah.
You're always going to have that. Because they get we have to take a motorcycle helmet off. You know, again, current guidelines. We need to take the football helmet off. Well, we've still got shoulder pads on. That's bad.
Right.
You know, so
they don't understand.
No. And if you try to get a meeting with them, that doesn't happen either.
So. That's unfortunate.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the best thing you guys could do is try to meet with them and try to discuss these
things. I've sent certified letters and everything and don't get any response. So,
but. All right. So if we're kind of closing up, give me the summary. So as an athletic trainer, I have a spinal cord injury on the field. What am I going to do? Give me the cut and dry steps.
I mean, if you're going to activate your emergency action plan, right? You're going to make sure the scene is safe and that the athlete's safe. There's no other injuries, no other injured patients. You're going to get your EMS guys available. I guess it's all part of your activating your emergency action plan. And then, you know, assess the ABCs, the most critical things, because we talked about death is worse than paralysis. Although, again, we talked about also the upper cervical injuries can result in, you know, respiratory compromise and death. And then, you know, I think you're going to stabilize the patient and, you know, get them on a board. Our recommendation is, you know, spinal precautions, 8-person lift, get them on a backboard, get them to the hospital as quick as you can, a hospital that can care for a spine injured patient.
Yeah, not removing pads, not the face mask.
I still feel that way, but again, the NATA's guidelines are going to recommend otherwise probably coming out.
I don't know that you can go wrong either way.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think you have to take – personally, I think it's just like every patient. So every patient's different. Every injury's different. I think you have to take every situation as a new situation, and you do what's best, what you guys deem is best. And I think the one really critical thing, you know, having been involved in this stuff for 5 years or so now, is that you guys are probably the most important people because you understand the equipment, you understand the injuries, you know, you understand the protocols, and really nobody else does, and that's the truth. Hopefully some of the sports physicians do, you know, if they're present.
Right.
Hopefully so.
All right. Well, thanks, Dr. Simon, for being on. Maybe I can get to give you some time at the hospital to check out what you're doing there.
Sure. Great. Anytime. Thanks for having me.
Thank you very much.
So this is still live. We're running live. So carry on conversation. Yeah.